And finally, in this week's Czech Books, David Vaughan talks to the writer Barbara Day about her book The Velvet Philosophers. It gives the details of philosophical seminars held in private flats in Prague in the 1970s and 80s under the watchful eye of the communist secret police.
Barbara Day works for a non-profit organization called the Prague Society, promoting international links in business, politics and academia. 25 years ago, Barbara was doing much the same thing. Then based in London, she was coordinating visits by Western academics to Czechoslovakia. But times could hardly have been more different. In those days, such initiatives were seen by the communist regime as a subversive activity. Constantly harangued by Czechoslovakia's secret police, the STB, visiting lecturers, including some of the world's most respected philosophers, would meet secretly at private flats. In what came to be known as the underground seminars, they would address small groups made up of dissidents, students, and anyone else brave enough to turn up. And lectures covered subjects as varied as the philosophy of Plato and the music of Mahler. Barbara Day has written a fascinating book, The Velvet Philosophers, that recounts the details of how the seminars worked. When I met Barbara to talk about the book, she began by telling me how the seminars started. It was in the first years after the Soviet invasion of 1968, when many of Czechoslovakia's top academics were thrown out of their jobs, and even their children found themselves in trouble.
When they were set up, it really was for the immediate need. How are we going to educate our children? A lot of them weren't even allowed to take the school leaving exam and had to go on to take manual jobs. And it networked. Groups knew what each other were doing. People attended maybe two or three different kinds of seminars. And the idea grew in one of these seminars, which belonged to a former Marxist ideologist, but who was also a philosopher who'd studied the classics. And one day he told his students, look, I've really come to the end of what I can teach you. And even if you went to the university in this country, you'd get a very limited education. What you really need are teachers from abroad who are continuing in the tradition of humanist and philosophical education. So he and his students then devised a letter which they sent out to four of the Western universities, two in Germany, Harvard and Oxford. Oxford was the only one that responded, or maybe the only one that actually received the letter and discussed it. And the committee for philosophy at Oxford University more or less unanimously decided, yes, we are getting a request for help from our colleagues living behind the Iron Curtain. Of course we're going to go and lecture their seminars. It's not even an issue.
It's extraordinary, isn't it, that the regime in Czechoslovakia at the time saw philosophy seminars as something subversive. Here is a regime seeing the study of philosophy as a threat, as a direct threat to itself. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
It is, and the lecturers who were coming and talking to the young people in the seminars were just absolutely blown away by the depth of interest. The seminars used to go on till the early hours, usually, because there were so many questions. And later on, when I interviewed one of the former students, he said, well, what we used to go to the seminars for was to find out how to live in a world of communism and lies.
And one of the things that intrigues me is how openly this was going on. The people who were organizing these seminars actually didn't try actively to keep everything secret, did they? There was almost a contempt, wasn't there, for the secret police, for the powers that be in Czechoslovakia, saying, we are going to be doing this under your nose. What are you going to do about it?
The drawback to this was that uniformed police and secret police would raid seminars quite regularly. And if a foreign lecturer was there, they'd sort of let him get 15 minutes into his lecture and then they would storm the apartment, take everyone into custody. And that lecturer would never actually get his visa back. He couldn't do a repeat visit. So we were all the time looking for a way to hold the seminars in a sense that they would still be open, but they would be discreet enough not to attract the attention of the secret police.
It amazes me the number of people who came over. I mean, probably the most famous example is possibly the best-known French thinker of the second half of the 20th century, the father of deconstructionism, Jacques Derrida. His visit was an extraordinary episode, wasn't it?
Yes, the attitude of the visiting lecturers varied a lot. Some of them were quite bold about coming. Others were extremely nervous. And one of the most nervous, as it happened, was Jacques Derrida. The secret police had been determined to make an example of one of these Western philosophers to really scare any other Western philosopher away from coming. In fact, it did the opposite. It encouraged them to come. And they planted drugs in his suitcase when it had been in his hotel room. So Derrida, not realizing that this had been happening, was on his way to the airport, and I'm just going to quote what happened. Passing through customs, he was called into a private room where police with dogs searched his cases eventually at the third attempt, after a telephone call evidently asking for help, finding four packets of a brown powder concealed in the lining. Over the next few hours, a protocol was written and photographs taken of him and his suitcases. Then he was taken to a police station, where from 4 p.m. to 12 midnight, he was interrogated about his life, his relationship with Czechoslovakia, and Kafka, whose grave he had visited. At midnight, he was charged with the production and traffic of drugs, and the team of lawyer, commissioner, interpreter, and prosecution departed, leaving him in the guard of one policeman. "Do you believe this charge?" Derrida asked the policeman. "Of course," replied the policeman. "That's just how Western intellectuals behave. Look at the Beatles."
So that's a short extract from your book, The Velvet Philosophers. Tell me a little bit about your own work at this time, that you were helping to organise these seminars from the United Kingdom and travelling backwards and forwards. What sort of work were you doing, and how did it work out?
I was doing really all the administrative work, from the keeping of minutes to the writing of letters. We were also briefing the visitors who went over. They became increasingly... The tasks they had to do were quite onerous and quite difficult, because they had to be careful not to carry anything on them that could risk someone else's safety.
It almost makes you sound like a spy master, sort of saying, this is what you have to do, and this is what you can say, and this is what you can't say.
It was a little bit like that. A briefing could take between 1 and 2 hours.
I'd like to turn to your book to one passage that I think shows the bizarre nature of the position of dissident intellectuals in Czechoslovakia at the time. There's a very brief description here of the manual work that two very well-known Czech intellectuals, Daniel Kropa and Martin Paloš, were involved in. If you could maybe read this little extract.
Yes, this is an extract from one of Roger Scruton's reports on his visit in 1983. Other stokers were not so fortunate. The work could involve 24-hour shifts of heavy labour. Daniel Kropa and Martin Paloš started work at 4 a.m, shoveling piles of coke to heat the Tiersch house. They would discuss philosophy leaning on their shovels and read volumes of Marx while sipping on heaps of coke, probably the last workers of the communist age to do so. Even in such lowly jobs as these, they would often be monitored by the secret police.
So here you have an impression of the kind of life that many academics, intellectuals were forced to lead after they were sacked from their university jobs. There is also a hint of romance in that, but I think in your book you make it very clear how unromantic the life of these people was, and the day-to-day grind of living under communism.
Yes, we were very much aware that we came over and experienced this only for a few days or a week or so at a time, and that the people we were working with were living with it 24 hours a day for all their lives. Also, in the early 1980s, it wasn't so clear that it was going to come to an end. People really thought that this could go on for another 50 years or so. And for young people, that was quite heartbreaking.
Barbara, your book, The Velvet Philosophers, was published exactly 10 years ago in 1999 on the 10th anniversary of the fall of communism. And that must have been such fun writing the book and getting to talk to some of the most interesting thinkers, writers, philosophers, not only in the Czech Republic and Slovakia, but also Britain, France, Germany, the United States. It must have been very interesting work.
It was. It was fascinating. And several of our colleagues were now in very important positions. Our main contact in Slovakia was Jan Czarnogórski, who at the 1989 November was actually in prison. Within a few weeks, he was Deputy Prime Minister of Czechoslovakia and went on to become Prime Minister of Slovakia. Petr Pithart, another Prime Minister. All these people were tremendously open about telling me how they'd lived through it, what their impressions were, what it meant to them. And what was really exciting for me was to put their takes on what had been going on compared with the Western philosophers of what they thought was going on. And the third source, which was fascinating to be able to bring it in to throw another light on the first two, was, of course, the files of the STB and what they thought they'd been doing when they'd been listening in on these conversations or interrogating the Western visitors. That also was very fascinating because every now and then you would get a policeman who was really genuinely interested in it all and took down verbatim what Roger Scruton had to say about other Western authors on the subject of communism. There was one on the border of Moravia and Austria who really wanted to know and wrote it down in his own report.
Really, the pen can be mightier than the sword.
Yes, indeed. I'm thinking of another comment of a visitor who said that if the secret police really had been listening in to all the lectures, then it must be the best educated secret police in Europe. But I'm afraid that they didn't really learn very much from the lectures, so that's just a bit of wishful thinking.
Barbara Day, your book, The Velvet Philosophers, was published in 1999 by the Claridge Press in London, since been taken over by Continuum in the United States. And it's certainly available in some bookshops here in Prague and also on the internet. Barbara, thank you very much indeed for talking to us at Radio Prague.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.